On this episode of the podcast, I have with me Matt Draws. He is the engineering manager of observability at Okta. We're going to be talking about observability and when and how you should actually differentiate that with the SRE teams. We're going to look at some of those best practices, some of the hiring challenges within observability. Matt, I'm excited for you to share your background information on this. I think you'd be on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Amir.
Awesome. Let's start off right at the top. Get to know what Okta does at a high level. If you could tell us, and then as an engineering manager of observability, what are some of your responsibilities?
Yeah, so Okta is an identity and access management platform that handles identity of people. So a good way to think about it is so if you're a developer coding an application, we basically take the security out of coding in the application for you. So you don't need to worry about handling that piece and you can just focus on the features that matter most to your customers. I think a lot of times people think of Okta as SSO only, but there's a lot more to it than that. That can make it easier for your day-to-day solutions. But thinking about the developer mindset and making it easy for the developer is kind of where we come in. And as far as like an observability manager, this was actually like a brand new role for me coming into observability as a whole. So it's been a big learning process throughout my almost 1.5 years here at Okta now. But a lot of it pertains to the three pillars of observability, which you'll probably hear a lot if you were to research it or hear it from me today. So metrics, logs, and traces are kind of the bread and butter to observability. There's a lot of different tools out there that you can use. But at the end of the day, we want to try to understand our applications and not in a reactive way, which is typically how traditional monitoring is. And I think how a lot of teams have historically gone about trying to understand, you know, what's going on in my application, especially as we start talking about more microservices and, you know, where exactly is my issue happening? I think it was different when we're in monolith applications and it was all pointing to this one application. But now with observability, it's really important to understand, you know, at what part of my application am I having an issue? Where is the latency at? And being able to identify that and pinpoint that really matters, especially as we talk about more nines of availability and trying to, you know, give better availability to our customers, because at the end of the day, customers want a product that's always available.
Actually, that's awesome. I love the kind of the background, because I was going to ask you to tell us a little bit about what observability is so everyone could be on the same page. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with that. I guess let me ask you this just to, you know, I keep up the first question. Why would you have a separate observability team? Because I think some of the things you just mentioned all make sense. I think some teams have smaller groups doing it. You know, maybe it's a DevOps, maybe it's an SRE, maybe it's a hybrid group. But when you're looking at the observability role, everything you just described, those functions, why keep that on its own?
Yeah, I've actually been on an SRE team where observability was part of it. And in my experience, having it part of it is that you don't necessarily spend as much time doing it. So you do a lot of the other, you know, fixing bugs in code, or you're helping out other teams if you're doing like an embedded SRE model. But as far as like the observability piece of it, you typically don't actually do that much of it. A lot of observability is really going about to other teams and communicating and teaching them best practices. Because a lot of the other engineering teams that you work with in your company don't necessarily have the time to invest in it. I mean, for them, a good baseline is just having an alert, and it's not a false alert, and it's triggering pretty regularly when there's an issue, but it's not triggering too much where it's just one that you ignore in Slack and you never go back to it. So I think that is kind of why you'd want to split it. So if you have observability, they're the ones that are really looking at your best interest for other teams and going in there and telling you like, okay, like maybe these metrics that you're pushing here don't make sense from a cost perspective, because a lot of it is also cost as well, because anybody will create a metric or a trace or push tons of data there, and those all have costs. So observability also has to monitor the cost piece of it as well, and kind of give best advice as to, all right, this is the why we should be doing something, and teaching it. So it's really not just kind of, okay, we set it up as SRE and this is how it has to be. It really comes down to showing the teams how to do it, because, you know, a lot of teams don't invest the time to do it.
So actually, that's really interesting. I think, you know, some of the points you bring up, I guess, is it dependent upon company size? So obviously, you know, bigger companies tend to have, you know, more refined, specialized groups, smaller companies, less resources. Are there advantages of smaller companies trying to figure out how to carve this piece out? Or what would some benefits be, maybe?
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting you ask that because, as you know, Okta acquired Auth0, and Auth0 was definitely a smaller company, but had observability. So, and Okta necessarily did more of the SRE model observability. So, there's two pieces to it, right? And I think it really depends on what you want to accomplish. So, from an internal standpoint, like people and teams love that there's the dedicated observability team that they can go to. They can ask questions. They can not feel like they're all on hook for it and trying to understand it. So they have that dedicated team where they feel like, okay, I have support to understand what's going on in my application. If I can't identify an issue, you know, I have a specialty person that I can go reach out to and they can help me out or understand the tool a little bit more than the time that I can invest into it.
And I guess in terms of, you know, when you are looking at larger companies and the shift to splitting this role out. You just mentioned, obviously, a smaller company actually having the observability spread out. Okta originally had it brought in. Is there going to be a financial view of this for bigger companies? I mean, let's not worry about smaller companies, but, you know, splitting out the role, is that going to financially help or hurt? Because obviously, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, you know, we're going to need another team. We need another manager. Is there an expense in this that I need to start figuring out? Obviously, there's probably value, but everyone is worried about that headcount.
Yeah, bottom line is always cost at the end of the day. So for us, like I think I mentioned a little bit earlier, like we're really always focused on trying to cut costs, and we're making sure that people aren't creating, like, say, custom metrics or for traces. They're not just throwing, you know, the kitchen sink at every let's throw every amount of traces to our tracing application. But, you know, well, let's do some kind of sampling and make sure what we have makes sense. Let's make sure that the log that we're putting in there also, we're not just abundance of logs, and we're making sure that teams are only putting information that's needed. So there's a lot of due diligence on the observability team part, which can help ultimately reduce costs. You know, there's a lot of times where you set some kind of observability tool up and you just throw everything at it. You have everything running. You have no idea if it's running. Your costs are just continually growing. And I think that's also something to factor in. Like, you don't need necessarily a big observability team to make an impact. You could have a few people who know things really well and do that. Or at the end of the day, you could have it part of SRE. It really just depends on, you know, your company, your budget. Maybe you could have a manager who manages both because, you know, for us, you know, we have an operations team, which is SRE and observability. So we're both under the same umbrella, but we're two separate teams. But SRE looks to us for the observability that we provide them so they can do their job for other teams and provide reliability engineering to help those other teams out around the organization.
That makes sense. And I guess, you know, earlier you mentioned some tools, and I think obviously there's some tools that can help. And then obviously it seems that everyone is now shifting into some form of engineering. You got to know some level of, you know, reading code, scripting. It's becoming an ever growing need for every facet of technology. When it comes to, you know, tools versus engineering in terms of the observability area, how much of it is tool driven? How much of it is engineering driven?
Yeah, it's really honestly a good 50-50 mix between tools and engineering. A lot of the engineering piece of it for us is like instrumentation of code. So helping to make sure that your metrics, logs, and traces are going to the specific tool that you're trying to send it to. So a big vendor agnostic solution right now is OpenTelemetry. So a lot of people can use OpenTelemetry, and then it's a vendor agnostic solution that you can port to any tooling you want. So a Datadog, a New Relic, a Lightstep, a Honeycomb, whatever the tooling may be, you could use any of those tools. Use OpenTelemetry as your collector, and then if you change a tool as a backend, it doesn't matter because the collector still can send it to any direction. So that's something that, like, our team is focusing on, moving to OpenTelemetry as a whole, because, you know, we don't want to be tied into one solution. So we feel like the business needs are changing, or, you know, the solutions that we were providing to our customers aren't the right solutions. Like, we can't get the job done. We can't figure out what the issue is at hand, or teams are having a hard time, and you know, incidents are taking a lot longer than they should, that's kind of where we need to come in with some expertise and make a decision about the path forward for observability.
I guess, you know, when I hear the 50-50 split, some of me starts thinking about, you know, as you're getting further refined and more niche in the area of focus and the skill set, it's got to be a little bit more challenging to have, I guess, well, maybe I'm going to ask you, is it more challenging to find people that have this combination of, hey, I know observability tools and engineering? Seems like you need some time to kind of be able to learn all these different parts. Doesn't seem like, hey, you know, second year employees, you know, out of school is jumping straight into this, or maybe they are. But how does that kind of impact hiring and the skill sets you look for and kind of the complexity of the role?
Definitely, there's a few unicorns out there, I would say, for observability that you can find. But yeah, there's not a ton out there. You can definitely, I would say that some of the basic skills that you would look for in observability would be just basic monitoring experience, kind of understanding, you know, what you've done with monitoring, and then really kind of teach teams to build on that. So one of the things that like my team did is we've had some new people that have come on, and there's a great book called Observability Engineering that's actually by, it was written by Honeycomb, and they write about, you know, what observability is, like why teams should be doing it. And it was actually just kind of a learning process that we did inside our company, where we did like a book club and just to try to teach other people about, you know, why do observability, why it matters, how you can help, you know, improve your availability of your application, and getting away from a more reactive approach to go more proactive and understanding, you know, what's going on before the issue actually occurs. But yeah, going back to the hiring, it, you know, I've gone through it a couple times, and it's about really finding somebody. I would say the number one thing that I would look for is just the fire and the passion to like want to talk and communicate, because a big part of the job is going to other teams and understanding, you know, their pain points within their applications and how we can improve their lives. So, you know, you can learn a lot of the tools, right? I feel like that's something that with some time and the right mentor, you can pick that up pretty easily. But the part that's a lot harder is if you don't like the communication piece and working with teams, and you're kind of more just like head down and on the keyboard, you're not going to necessarily probably thrive as much in the role. So that's something that like I've always kind of looked for, and a lot of the other skills that they have, you know, we can learn. And as far as the engineering skills go, any kind of programming language really to kind of do the instrumentation, it's very niche, I guess you could say, in trying to pick it up and learn it, but there's some great resources online. If you can read documentation, if you're curious and you want to learn, then there's no reason why you couldn't be like a successful observability engineer.
It sounds like it's got its own complexity for sure. I saw you smiling when you started first answering the question. So I was like, obviously it's something that crosses in mind. You know, something I get, and I ask hiring managers, especially, you know, on the shared platform, observability, SRE, DevOps teams, is, you know, the fact that you don't ship code that's seen directly by the end user, right? If you're working on in different parts of the application, maybe someone does see your work directly, maybe they don't, but in observability, probably not being seen directly, like somebody's not going, oh, that was an awesome feature released. How does the team deal with that? How do you help the team deal with that? Is it just part and parcel of the role, and you understand, hey, listen, you know, I'm not going to be the person who's seeing that done. How does that work for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that was a struggle when I joined with the team of, you know, does the work that we do actually matter? And, you know, it's easy to not feel appreciated being kind of more of a operations, I guess you could say, role somewhat. But yeah, I think, you know, as a manager, it's really important to make sure that your team gets recognized for the things that they do. One of the things that I've done now is I've created like a newsletter for our team that basically goes out to our engineering org to kind of talk about, you know, who's been doing what on of our team, just giving some shout outs. You know, big ways that you can improve in the organization, I think I mentioned, were cost savings. So like being able to figure out, okay, we were spending, you know, X amount of dollars here, and we've now saved 30% by doing X amount of changes. Those are the things that go a long way that like, especially senior leadership and other people in the company will appreciate. And then also when you have a lot of issues where somebody's trying to identify an issue in their application, and you kind of come in there and help them out. People remember that stuff, and that goes a long way. People share that to their managers. So those are a couple ways that you could really still get recognition, even though it's not like, oh, we shipped this brand new feature and it has the shiny bow on it that everybody's kind of talking about. So it's really just that important to tie it back and, you know, why are we doing what we're doing? And ultimately, like I think I said in the beginning, you know, tying it to the nines of availability of like, we're providing this valuable tooling, product, expertise to other teams so that they can achieve that and we can provide a better service for our customers.
That's a great way of viewing it. I love the fact there's a newsletter that goes out. I think celebrating those wins, especially in this type of role, seems crucial. Flip side, obviously, observability is normally bringing attention possibly to an issue and partnering on something they see that needs attention. Sometimes I think I talk to people on the security side and I'm like, well, it's that notion that, you know, you're asking for negative attention. That's not always easy either. How do you deal with that? Because obviously people, you know, you guys are in a position of observing systems and bringing attention to when things don't go right. And does it have that similar connotation as security where it's like, oh, you guys only say things when things are going right? Or is that kind of shifting from the view and it's more of a, hey, we're integral in keeping things running. So it's actually a massive business value add because everyone will notice when things don't.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely people notice for sure if things aren't going right. You know, we've had issues where like logs, for instance, weren't working appropriately, or we had information in logs that we wish weren't in logs. And, you know, it's always a matter of doing your due diligence and making sure that the right information is in there. Right. Because anything could get pushed out that you hope doesn't get pushed out, or maybe logs are missing for application that you're trying to understand exactly what's going on. So yeah, it definitely just talking to other teams and being, you know, transparent with security or whoever you're trying to talk to about what's going on is kind of the best way to approach it.
I guess when it comes to, you know, someone who wants to move into observability, is there, I mean, you mentioned tools with mentorship you can learn, but let's say I want to move into observability. I'm a software engineer someplace, or I'm on another team, DevOps even. Is it a question of I need to start learning those tools? Is it a volunteering? How does someone actually maybe start moving into the observability role if they're really interested?
Yeah, I would say kind of taking the being curious about, so if you're an SRE or DevOps, kind of taking on some of the monitoring pieces that your team currently does, and maybe even trying to, okay, how do I push this further for our company right now? Like a big approach for us has been tracing. Tracing is kind of like that new kid on the block when it comes to observability. A lot of people have done metrics and logs for many years now, but tracing is kind of one of those new pillars of observability that people want to get into because it's really just a nice waterfall approach that allows you to see like everything that's happening with every request versus like, you know, going through hundreds of thousands of log lines and trying to understand, you know, what exactly is my issue. So like that is like a great way for your company. If you're thinking about like, how do we improve this? Like that would be something that would be curious to me that like, oh, I went about and I started noticing that, you know, tracing could be valuable for my organization. And, you know, maybe did a POC around it, or maybe we tried to set it up and, you know, what was the results of that? I think that has been the biggest skills gap would be tracing in general, I would say, that I've seen. So it's really interesting to me when I see somebody who's done an extensive amount of tracing previously out of role, because it's not something that I would say is super common at this point.
Interesting. And I guess as you're, let's say you're actually going through to hire somebody to the team, how long is the hiring process? Because I think every role based on complexity and kind of willingness to trade off, you know, typically has a certain length of process. This sounds like a more of a niche type of role. Is it a case where you have to just wait till the right person comes in? Are you looking for closest attributes? Because, you know, maybe, as you mentioned, it's still not a common, you mentioned the unicorns. How do you approach that? Is it you wait, or do you potentially find the person that you think might, you know, ramp up best into the role with a little training and mentorship?
It really depends on how senior of a role we want to hire. If it's somebody definitely more towards like a senior staff, you know, principal person, then I would say that we would probably be a little bit more picky. If it's somebody that, you know, is more junior, kind of, you know, maybe a couple years of experience, then, you know, we kind of look at the tangibles that they have and like, okay, do we think they could learn and pick this up? So I think it just depends on the business need. Preferably it's better to have somebody that has the skill set that can kind of come in and contribute. But the expectation is different depending on what like grade level you would come in into your role.
Okay. That's interesting. Yeah. I think obviously, it seems like it's one of those where, you know, the more senior the role, the harder to find person, because there's just not a ton of people who are, you know, potentially experts, in both the 50-50 of tools and engineering. Seems like an interesting challenge. When it comes to looking at your day-to-day and how hands-on you have to be, how much management aspect there is to your job, how does your day set up, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, when I first started, it was a lot more hands off the keyboard, but I've definitely been just more hands-on now, just because we are a bit of a smaller team and there's just a lot of different requests that come into us, and trying to say test out new observability tools and making sure that, you know, everything is functioning and people are getting the value out of what we're providing has been some of the work that we've been focusing on. And because of that, it's easy to get kind of stretched thin. So I'd try to come in and help with a lot of the cost saving stuff. That's something that I've kind of put on myself lately, to identify and realize, okay, where can we save costs? Where are we overspending? And then kind of pushing out those changes so that the team doesn't have to focus on that. They can focus on more of the engineering piece of work of it and making sure that like everything that we're providing with the logs, metrics, and traces are acceptable and people are excited to use what we're providing for them. Because, you know, we've definitely had challenges with that where, you know, people weren't happy with, you know, what we're building or what's out there. And it's really a matter of listening to our engineering partners and taking that feedback and making sure that, you know, we're evaluating that and making changes to improve.
I was going to ask you, because I mean, obviously it's the only thing people are talking about, not the only thing, it's one of the most talked about components of 2023 already is AI. There's lots of talk of how it impacts technologists. I guess as you're kind of seeing and hearing AI and the, I guess as the tooling itself is starting to incorporate some more and more AI, does that help hurt the team? Does it, what happens to the team, out of curiosity, the observability group?
Yeah, honestly, we haven't explored too much of the AI piece of it. You know, I think it may be able to help answer questions about, you know, observability, or maybe how to like, if I want to instrument some code for some metrics, maybe it can help with that. But as far as like setting up a service and getting instrumentation set up, I'm not really sure. I haven't really tried that, but I'm kind of curious to see how that would work.
Do you think that AI would be able to be proactive in components of observability? I'm sure there are facets to that now, but as it's kind of evolving.
Maybe at some point in the future. I mean, I don't see why it couldn't, but for now, I don't think it would necessarily reach that yet, unless somebody's already working on that. There's going to be this new tool that comes out that's going to be AI driven and everybody's going to be talking about that next big thing to move to, but I don't think just yet.
Yeah. So still got some time to go. Matt, I was going to say, it's been awesome having you on, sharing. I like to ask everyone before I let them go, what they'd like to ask a future guest to talk about, as a topic, because obviously, maybe we get somebody to help answer a question that you're curious about, if there's anything that you'd like to hear about.
Yeah. I mean, just having today's conversation, and we were talking about, you know, SRE and observability. I would love for somebody else from the SRE side, another company, to talk about, you know, their observability within SRE and kind of hearing that, the flip side of it now, and kind of how they're handling that, or if they're handling that, and how successful they feel like it's going for them.
Awesome. That's a good one, actually. I have a couple of people lined up from the SRE side. Maybe I got to go back and ask them to talk about that. If someone does want to ping you on anything observability, you've covered a lot of different areas. What's a good way of somebody getting a hold of you?
Yeah, my LinkedIn would probably be the best. Just to send me a message on there. I'm pretty active, so I can get back to you guys pretty soon.
Okay, cool. We'll include that in the show notes. Matt, thanks for being on the show. I really appreciate it. I learned a lot more about observability. I hope hope everyone's going to kind of take some more components away. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Amir. Appreciate it.
All right. That's it for this episode. We'll be back again to our guest, different topic. Until then, two things. If you like the episode, share it with somebody else that you might know. That's how actually the podcast has grown. And then like it, subscribe it. If you can leave a comment wherever you have listened to this episode, that'd be awesome. Until next time, thank you and goodbye.